Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Episode 3 of The Way of Chuang Tzu. So this is a book which rather surprised me. I thought it was going to be The Art of War or something like that. And so this is a scholar from 300 BC. So the Greeks were just a twinkle in the eye of civilization at this point in time. This is before Pythagoras and a lot of the early Greek philosophers. So Greece hasn't really started. Persia is brimming along with these. I think they've got Zoroastrian beliefs. They've got Confucianism and Taoism. And Taoism is this sort of belief in cosmic abstractness. It's sort of pretty good in actual fact. And this scholar has really laid waste to my brain this introduction I've read. I really can't remember any of it. There you go. This is a horrible thing reading through, but I do remember that he had this little, he's got these little parables, these little stories in which these things are discussed, and you're led down one path and he says another. But as an Australian, I have another viewpoint. His second parable is a hat salesman and a capable ruler. Okay. A man of Sung did business in silk ceremonial hats. So 300 BC and the Chinese are making silk. Pretty amazing. He travelled with his load of hats to the wild men of the south. The wild men had shaved heads, tattooed bodies. They did not. What did they want with silk ceremonial hats? Yao wisely governed all China. He had brought the entire world to a state of rest. After that, he went to visit the four perfect ones in the distant mountains of Kuxi. When he came back, can we turn the page now? So this is the hat salesman. He's got basically, this is a bit like Southern Sydney. There's a shop. Oh my God, it doesn't go. Across the border into his own city, his lost gaze saw the throne. Is that what? That can't be. Oh, no, yeah, that is. His lost gaze saw the throne. Well, that went, shoo, did you hear that? It went straight in my head. So he went out, and then to his own city, his lost gaze saw no throne. Something deep there. He had a big vision for people. So the hat salesman is like the emperor. He's got these silk hats, silk ideas, but you got the riffraff who are not really interested in all his finery, and so he goes out, does it, and compromises with them and doesn't come back. I don't quite understand that. I think I sort of get it, that a silk hat salesman is this beautiful idea. These people are rough and they don't understand it, goes down and deals with them, but in dealing with them, he loses sight of his throne. Very short poem, very in depth. Not too much description there. Okay, the next one here. So we've had the tree, the stuffed tree. You can't be just a stuffed tree. You have to go out into a desert and provide shade there. Go into your own dominion and do that. This one is, I think the science one is, if you've got highfalutin ideas and you try and sell them, if you move from your area and go and try and convince the riffraff who don't understand what it's all about, that your yobbos, your people which we call from the Shire, we have these sort of ultra-Australian nationalistic thong-wearing, ultra-barbecue, sort of extremophile Australians. And if you speak to them, they're rednecks, and you lose your way talking to them. I think that might be the nature of it. This next one is called The Breadth of Nature. And just to give you an idea how long this one's going to last for, this is also a very short one. This is just four stanzas. When great nature sighs, we hear the winds, which, noiseless in themselves, awaken voices in other beings. That's beautiful. blowing on them. From every opening, loud voices sound. Have you not heard the rush of tones? You know, which I certainly can do. There stands the overhanging wood on the steep mountain, old trees with holes and cracks, like snouts and maws and ears, like beam sockets, like goblets. Grooves in the wood are hollows full of water. You hear the mooring, roaring, whistling, shouts of commands, grumbling, deep drones, sad flutes. One call awakens another in dialogue. Gentle winds sing timidly. Strong one blasts without restraint. When the wind dies down, the openings empty out of their last sound. I sort of can. I think if the allegory is for a deep concept and day-to-day commerce, might be my idea of this one. Have you not overheard how all then trembles and subsides? You replied, I understand. The music of the earth sings through a thousand holes. The music man is made on flutes and instruments. What makes a music of heaven? Master Ki said, something is blowing on thousands of different holes. Some power stands behind all and makes the sound dies down. What is the power? Yeah, I think there could be a coronavirus story in there, that everyone is had their the coronavirus has made us silent, so there is a deeper concept there. I sort of like that one, in terms of there's the wind, but the absence of wind means that people, when you stop trying to teach people, stop blowing the wind and you just listen to everyone, you say, well, aren't you speaking a load of shit? Perhaps. As an Australian theologian, I'm not a theologian at all. Great knowledge. This is the next one. And the great knowledge, I would expect. I really would like something to go through for a few pages, so I could. Oh, this goes for a page in a bit. Great knowledge sees all in one. Small knowledge breaks down into many. That is interesting. That is. You need a combination of great knowledge and small knowledge. When the body sleeps and the soul is enfolded in one, that is the great one, it's capital O-N-E, when the body wakes, the opening begins to function. They resound with every encounter, with all the varied business of life, the strivings of the heart. Men are blocked, perplexed, lost in doubt. Little fears eat away their peace of heart. Fear, great fears follow them home. Across the shot, arrows shoot at a target, hit and miss, right and wrong. That is all. Is what all men call judgment, decision. A shooting, yes, making a decision. Their pronouncements are final, as treaties between emperors. Oh, they make their point. Yet their arguments fall faster and feebler, their dead leaves in autumn and winter. Their talks flow like piss. As in urine. That's pretty interesting. Turning the page here, guys. My hands, I've washed my hands so much with coronavirus, washing my skin's all sharp. Okay, never to be recovered. They stand at last, blocked, bound, and gagged, choked up like old drain pipes. The mind fails. It shall not see the light again. Now, this is trying to think a drain pipe. These Chinese had drain pipes, and we in Europe had thatched huts and mud and filth. Here we go. Pleasure and rage, sadness and joy, hopes and regrets, change, stability, weaknesses, decision, impatience, and sloth. All are sounds from the same flute, all mushroom from the same wet mould. Day and night, flow one another and come upon us without us seeing how they sprout. Enough, enough. Early and late we meet the that from which the these all grow. If there is no that, there would be no this, and if there were no this, there'd be nothing for all these winds to play on. So far as we go, but how shall I understand what brings it about? One man, well supposed, the true governor, to be behind it all. Such powers works, I can believe, I cannot see his form. He acts, but has no form. So he's saying that I sort of get that. I sort of like, this is profound abstract knowledge. It sort of goes to the Greek view. The Greek view about knowledge and ignorance and great knowledge. But I do like the idea of a great knowledge and small knowledge. It sort of has a business implication because people are interested in startups, and they start up without working out what a finish down is. You know, they have a startup which is sort of like a blind, you know, running into the bush blind, but a finish down looks at the entire map and the whole terrain going through. That's big knowledge, small knowledge. So I see a business aspect of it there, going there. And then the idea of this spirit, I really could read that once or twice to try and get the idea of it, but it sounded as though there's a lot of noise going inside that person's head. The pivot, readings from Changzhou. That's what it is called. This session. Tao is obscured when men understand only one of a pair of opposites, or concentrate on the partial aspect of being. Now, the theory of opposites to make a whole is quite interesting. It's in Leibniz and Kant and stuff like that. So I think they had the not other. I can't remember who came up with the not other. The idea of opposites and a whole. But it's basically a logical A, not A, the relationship to not A and the understanding of not A. That's my basic understanding from that. Okay. Then clear expression also becomes muddled by mere wordplay, affirming this one aspect and denying all the rest. And so this is basically your self-taught person as opposed to an academic trained mind. A self-taught person has the knowledge is their commitment, so they don't come in professionally. They don't see a balance. They don't see the art of knowledge. They see the knowledge itself rather than the art of knowledge. Let's see, go. Hence the wrangling of Confucians and Moists. I don't know who a Moist is. Each denies what the other affirms, and affirms what the other denies. And what use is the struggle to set up no against yes and yes against no? Better to abandon this hopeless effort and seek the true light. There is nothing more that cannot be seen from the standpoint of not I. And there is nothing which cannot be seen from the standpoint of the I. There you go. If I begin by looking at anything from a viewpoint of not I, then I do not really see it, since it's not I that sees it. If I begin from where I am, I see it as I see it, and then may become possible for me to consider then it may also become possible for me to see how others sees it. Hence this theory of reversal, that opposites produce each other, depend on each other, and complement each other. I sort of get that. So I would say this is perhaps, you know, your difference between a good civil service looks at the theory of the knowledge, the quality of the knowledge, the quality control of knowledge going in, rather than having a I've got these glasses and they're really hurting my face. Oh, sorry about that. That's just a stupid thing to say. Francis Bacon has sort of had something to say on this thing about bias and things. Okay, I shouldn't be philosophizing. I'm trying to understand it as I'm reading it. However, this may be, life is followed by death. Death is followed by life. Oh dear. The possible becomes impossible. The impossible becomes possible. Right turns into wrong, or wrong into right. The flow of life alters circumstances, and thus things and themselves are altered in their turn. But disputants continue to affirm and to deny the same things that they have always affirmed to deny, ignoring the new aspects of reality presented by the changing conditions. I think that is true. So this is looking at all the little societies here in, you know, little Glenbrook Historical Society, little Returned Soldiers Society, seeing there what that they've got limited to actually replay, like a record. They replay what they've done last year, but only a little bit better, a little bit bigger. So they want to keep doing what they've done before, and So they look at things and they have a position. Okay, so this is, I suppose, differently, that you should become as a consultant rather than a shopkeeper. I don't know what the difference is, a proprietor. The wise man, therefore, instead of trying to prove this or that point by logical disputation, sees all things in the light of direct intuition. Oh dear. He is not imprisoned by the limitations of eye for the viewpoint and the direct intuition of both eye and not eye. Hence he sees that that on both sides of every argument are both right and wrong. He also sees at the end of they are reducible to the same thing, once they are related to the pivot of Taoism. So I don't quite understand that, but I would say this is professional consultancy. When the wise man grasps that pivot, he is in the centre of the circle, and there he stands while yes and no pursue each other around the circumference. I like that idea. So the pivot of Tao passes through the centre where all affirmations and denials converge. He who grasps the pivot is at the still point, which all movement and oppositions can be seen in their right relationships. Hence, he sees limitless possibilities. I do like the idea of big and small knowledge and going out and in. So there's something I definitely see in terms of strategic thinking of both yes and no. Abandoning all thought of imposing a limit of taking sides, he resists a direct intuition. Therefore, I said, quote, better to abandon disputation and seek the true light. Well, there you go. So I sort of understand that. That sort of goes in the way of my thinking at the moment in terms of it's not that I yes or no, they've sort of chucked me out of the yes or no bit, locked me away, and so taking an opinion one or the other, no one's going to listen to me. If I firmly agree with them, I'm irrelevant to them, and if I'm against them, they ignore me. I'm to be ignored in two ways, which is a blessing in a way, because it then says, well, let's, If I'm not there, let's look at the next thing before, the next thing to develop. So it just means that I've just got to study more and more. This is page 43, 3 in the morning. When we wear out our minds, stubbornly clinging to one partial view of things, refusing to see the deeper agreement between this and its complementary opposite, we are what is called three in the morning. What is three in the morning? A monkey trainer went to his monkeys and told them, as regard to your chestnuts, you're going to have three measures in the morning and four in the afternoon. At which they all became angry. So he said, all right, in that case, I'll give you four in the morning and three in the afternoon. This time they were satisfied. Two arrangements were the same in that the number of chestnuts did not change, but in one case the animals were displeased, and in the other they were satisfied. The keeper had been willing to change his personal arrangement in order to meet the objective conditions. He lost nothing by it. So I can see this is he actually really saying be a consultant? It's also like a psychologist. The psychologist must always give something in the framework of people with which they're prepared to agree. There's no point asking them to move outside their ability. A truly wise man, considering both sides of a question without partiality, sees them both in the light of Tao. This is called following two courses at once. Isn't that beautiful? I actually agree with that. But I've become a Taoist by being absolutely rejected and thrown out by my employer and all that type of stuff. I've been abandoned after your stroke and stuff like that. People saying, oh, stroke, off you go. You can, yeah, there's no hope for you. You're not going to be able to rebuild. And if you rebuild, they go, well, I've shut the door on you. So it's sort of a strange thing reading this Chinese philosophy, because he's obviously got all his faculties. He's got them. Cutting up an ox. Well, my immediate thing as the tree, I think myself as the ox. Bloody hell, I'd hate to be the ox. Princess Wenlu's cook was cutting up an ox. Out went a hand, down went a shoulder. He planted a foot, he pressed in a knee. The ox fell apart with a whisper. The bright, clever cleaver murmured like a gentle wind, rim timing like a sacred dance, like a mulberry grove, like ancient harmonies. Good work, the prince exclaimed. Your methods are faultless. Method, the cook said, laying his aside his cleaver. What I follow is Tao, beyond all methods. So it is the force. Let the force be with you. My God, it's not going to be that. It's going to be something more, please. You know, which goes to the idea of your sort of central mind letting things go. And when I first begin, I cut open the ox, I would see for me the whole ox all in one mass. After 3 years, I no longer saw this mass, I saw distinctions. But now I see nothing with my eye, my whole being apprehends, my senses are idle, the spirit free to work out a plan, follows its own instinct, guided by a natural line. By the secret opening of the hidden space, my cleaver finds its own way, I cut through no joint, I chop no bone. Well, bloody poor rocks, isn't it? But it does go to what I say, you keep on doing, for me, sorry for getting back, you do keep on doing rehab exercises, and eventually your typing reaches a level and then you go back and it just moves forward. So I don't know whether this neuropsychology something here. A good cook needs to know a chopper. Once a year he cuts. A poor cook needs one every month. He hacks. Which is sort of like the efficiency of thinking, I would say. I never use the same cleaver 19 years. It has cut up 1,000 oxen. Its edge is keen as if newly sharpened. Oh dear. What's this? I have used the same cleaver. So I have never used. I've used the same cleaver. So this is, I suppose, something for sufficient study and meditation if you don't do sufficient back study. So when you come to do something, your mind is not developed enough. There are spaces in the joints. The blade is thin and keen. With its thinness, it finds that space. With all the room you need, it goes like a breeze. Hence, I have a cleaver 19 years, as if newly sharpened. Well, there you go. And this, I suppose, means that you can get your brain in endless politics of committees that someone has put up in front of you, as to you, like you can't see that people have put obstacles in front of you. True, there are sometimes tough joints. I feel them coming. I slow down. I watch closely. Hold back, barely move the blade, and whomp, it falls away, landing like a clod of earth. Then I withdraw the blade. I stand still. I let the joy of the work sink in. I clean the blade and put it away. My God, Father. This is a beautiful Aussie analogy. It's a little getting ready for the barbie. Prince once said, "That is it. My cook has shown me how I ought to live my own life." Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? So that's goes for me. So I'm off podcasting, reading this book while other people sort of fighting for their lives, doing things, preoccupied with doing things. Okay, the man with one foot on and the marsh pheasant. Oh, that's great. This is the sort of thing that I will go, you go down to the pub and go, what the fuck? Ox, you know, they're just not used to this. If you said ox, a hat salesman, a monkey trailer, these are all fundamental people. They're all doing things, and they're seeing these people all do their little labours, and they have a message to the big people. But I do like the large knowledge and small knowledge, and if you don't have a balance between the two, I think that's a beautiful thing. The man with one foot and the marsh pheasant. Kung Wai Hen saw a maimed official whose left foot had been cut off, a penalty in a political game. As you do, you're a politician, you've stuffed up, you've built the road, bridge in the wrong place, off goes the foot. "What kind of man," he cried, "is a one-footed oddity? How did he get that way? Man did this, or heaven?" "Heaven," he said, "this comes from heaven, not from man. When heaven gave this man life, it willed he should stand out from the others and send him into politics to get himself distinguished. See, one foot, the man is different." So I like that, because I do know corrupt... Look, we do have outrageously corrupt politicians, I'm afraid to say. Australia, for all... What makes me cringe is Australia telling off other countries about being corrupt. And we have got the most corrupt... Well, our local politicians are so corrupt. But he's got one foot... He's been thinking... "The little marsh pheasant must hoop 10 times to get a bite of grain. She must run 100 steps before she takes a sip of water. Yet she doesn't ask to be kept in a hen run, though she might have all she desired before her. She'd rather run and seek her own living uncaged." Well, I think that goes for the average citizen. Yeah, he's not interested in politics, so... Yeah, I really, really, having one foot means... it's obviously, you'd lose your foot due to corruption. Now he's distinguished by corruption. I don't understand why you put those two together. It's sort of a bit weird for him. Okay, the fasting of the heart. There you go. The fasting of the heart. What does that mean? The heart. What? I don't understand. "Yen Hu, the favourite disciple of Confucius, came to take leave of his master." So... we wonder. I know this guy doesn't like Confucius. He thinks he's a bit of a nong. "Where are you going?" asked Confucius. "I'm going to Wei." "And what for?" "Well, I've heard that the Prince of Wei is a lustily full-blooded fellow and is entirely self-willed. He takes no care of his people and refuses to see any fault in himself. Donald Trump, if I've ever seen him. He pays no attention to the fact that his subjects are dying right and left. God, corpses lie all over the country like hay in the field. People are desperate. But I've heard you, Master, say that one should leave the state that is well governed and go to which is in disorder. At the door of a physician there are plenty of sick people. I want to take the opportunity to put into practice what I've learnt from you and see if I can bring about some improvement in conditions there." Well, I'm pretty well afraid that the last thing an American wants to do is listen from anybody else. "Alas," said Confucius, "you do not realise what you are doing. You will bring disaster upon yourself. Tao has no need for your eagerness." So Confucius believed in Taoism. What? Okay. "And you will only waste your energy with your misguided efforts. Give up. I will not bother with people." Wasting. I'm with Confucius on this one. "Wasting your energy, you will become confused and then anxious. A bit like the bad butcher. You know, you haven't really thought yourself about. Once anxious, you will no longer be able to help yourself. The sages of old first sought Tao in themselves, then looked to see if there was anything in others that corresponded to the Tao that they knew. But if you only have Tao yourself, what business have you spending your time and vain efforts to bring corrupt politicians to the right path? However, I suppose you must have some basis for your hope, success. How do you propose to go about it?" Yen Hui replied, "I intend to present myself as a humble, disinterested man, seeking only to do what is right and nothing else. A completely simple and honest approach. Will this win his confidence?" "Certainly not," Confucius replied. "This man is convinced that he alone is right." Donald Trump is in my head when he says this. "He may pretend that only to take interest in your objective standard of justice, but not be deceived by his expression. He is not accustomed to being opposed by anyone. His way to reassure himself that he is right by trampling on other people. If he does this with mediocre men, he will will all the more certainly do it with you, who presents a threat by claiming to be a man of high qualities. He will cling stubbornly to his own way. He may pretend to be interested in your talk, which will be objectively right, but interiorly he will not hear you, and there will be no change whatsoever. You will get nowhere with this. Good on you, Confucius. You're a bit like an Aussie. Confucius was an Australian. There you go. Huan Yu says, very well, indeed, I'm directly opposing him. I will maintain my own standards interiorly, but outwardly I'll appeal to yield. I will appeal to the authority of tradition and to the examples of the past. He who is interiorly uncompromised is a son of heaven just as much as any ruler. I will not rely on teaching any teaching of my own, and will consequently have no concerns about whether I am approved or not. I will eventually be recognized as a perfectly disinterested and sincere. Then I will come to be appreciated. They will all come to appreciate my candor and thus be an instrument of heaven in their midst. In this way, yielding to the obedience of the prince as other men do, bowing, kneeling, prostrating myself as a servant, should I shall be accepted without blame. Then the others will have confidence in me, and gradually I will make use of me, seeing that I desire not to make myself useful to work for the good at all. Thus, I will be an instrument of men. Meanwhile, all I have to say will be expressed in the terms of ancient traditions. I will be working with the sacred tradition of the ancient sages. Though what I say may be objectively a condemnation of princely conduct, it will not be I who say it, but tradition itself. In that way, I will be perfectly honest and not give offence. Thus, I will be an instrument of tradition. Do you think I have the right approach? Certainly not, says bloody Confucius. By gag, Confucius is a bloke. A bloke down the pub. You have to. Oh my god. Yes, this has got a bit of umption to this one. You have to. So, I'm just sorry about this. You have too many different plans of actions when you have not even got to know the prince and observed his character. At best, you might get away with it and save your skin, but if you will not change anything whatsoever, he might perhaps superficially conform with your words, but there will be no real change in his heart. Huan Yu then said, well, at this the best I have to offer. That is the best I have to offer. Will you, master, tell me what you suggest? You must fast, said Confucius. Do you know what I mean by fasting? It's not easy, but easy always do not come from God. But easy ways do not come from God. Oh, said Huan Yu, I'm not used to fasting at home. We are poor. We went for many months without wine or meat. That fasting, is it not? Well, you can call it observing a fast, if you like, said Confucius, but it's not fasting of the heart. Tell me, Huan Yu, what is fasting of the heart? So what's this story of this one called? I think this is the... we've done a 1 minute pleasant. Fasting, it's called the fasting of the heart. Well, there you go. Confucius. Remember, Confucius is now a dinky dire Aussie because he doesn't like politicians. The goal of fasting of the inner unity, this means hearing but not with the ear, hearing but not with the understanding, hearing with the spirit, your whole being, the hearing that only is only in the ears is one thing, the hearing of understanding is another. But hearing of the spirit is not limited to any one faculty, to the ear, to the mind, hence demands emptiness of all the faculties. And when the faculties are empty, then the whole being listens. There is then a direct grasp of what the right thing before you that can never be heard. with the ear or understood with the mind. Fasting of the heart empties the faculties, frees you from limitations and preoccupation. Fasting of the heart begets unity and freedom. And this is something I would say, what Confucius? You know, just a crock of shit, I would say, perhaps. So he's saying that you don't listen, you don't think, you're just empty and you're just there. Things, it's just like, I don't know, a brick could fast in that sense. I see, said Yen Hui, what was standing in my way was my own self-awareness. And if I can begin this fasting of the heart, self-awareness will vanish. Then I will free myself from the limitation and preoccupation. Is that what you mean? Yep. Yes, says Confucius. That's this. If you can do this, you'll be able to go. Grasshopper, you can take this grasshopper from my... No, if you can take this bean from my hand, grasshopper. It's a bit like a Kung Fu movie. If you can do this, you'll be able to go among men in their world without upsetting them. We will not enter into conflict with their ideal image of themselves. If they will listen, sing them a song. If not, keep silent. Don't try to break down the door. Don't try out new medicines on them. Just be there amongst them, because there is nothing else for you but to be but one of them. Then you may have success. I sort of like this. This is sort of like the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute. We're not trying to say anything. We're just there, quietly witnessing, listening to what's going on, suggesting. It's easy to stand still and leave no trace, but it is hard to walk without touching the ground. If you follow human methods, you can get away with deception. If you follow the way of the Tao, no deception is possible. Tao. You know that one can fly with wings. You have not yet learned about flying without wings. You are familiar with the wisdom of those who know, but you have not learnt the wisdom of those who know not. Isn't that amazing? I sort of get that one. It's sort of, look, can I say it's just so horrible in my mind in terms of I'm reading it, thinking about it, but it's not going into long-term memory. Look at this window. It has nothing but a hole in the wall, but because the whole room is full of light, and because the whole room is full of light, so when the faculties are empty, the heart is full of light. Being full of light becomes an influence by which others are secretly transformed. I sort of rather like that. That sort of says it's. I sort of think that's the sort of general strategy I'm trying to do in certain ways. Okay, reading The Three Friends. Okay, so that was the fasting of the heart. So by completely not entering and not judging and just providing counsel. I do that a bit. There were three friends discussing life. One said, three men who worked into a bar, a Scotchman, Irishman and an Englishman, something like that. One said, this is the biggest bar, this is really tremendous, the best drink ever, and that's a get out, Donald Trump. Can men live together, and can men live together and knowing nothing of it, work together and produce nothing? Can they fly around in space and forget to exist, the world without end? Three friends looked at each other and burst out laughing. They had no explanation. They were better friends than before. Then one friend died. Confucius sent a disciple to help the other two chant obsequies. Discipline found that one friend had composed a song. The disciple found that one friend had composed a song while the other played a lute. Well, that's three friends. So one person asks these crock of shit questions, and then, like, can you work together, produce? Can men live together and know nothing, produce nothing? Oh, yes. Sort of, I can sort of see that. Yeah, that's work together and produce nothing, live together and know nothing. So the two mates, two drinking buddies, go around and they go, oh, shit, Confucius, I'm going to send someone up to you. I'm going to listen. And someone says, well, here's the, play me the riff. And then they sang. One man sang. I'm just going to read this up again. He said, fell from that one friend. Well, no, he, this one person singing, the other person's playing. Oh, okay, so he could play a lute and sing. Hey, Sung-hu, where do you go? Hey, Sung-su, where do you go? You've gone. Where you really were, and we are there. Damn it, we are there. We are here. Where you really were, you've gone. Where you really were, and we are here. Damn it, we're here. Then disciples, confused, burst in on them, and exclaimed, "May I inquire where you found this in the rubrics of obsequies? This frivolous caroling in the presence of the departed." Two friends looked at each other and laughed. "Poor fellow," they said, "he doesn't know the new liturgy." Well, I think there's a story about here about just two guys in a pub. They just go on, let's sing anything on their lute. The Chinese people go out. It's just the standard pub chat. This is one of the things, is you go down as a university student studying the lab all day, and then you go have a drink, and then you just have a conversation with some labourers, and it just does not make sense. Or truckies. I think there were truckies, my overthink. And this is getting real fun. So one friend, three friends, one friend dies. What's the punchline? Oh, one's dead, and we have a talk about. Okay, now this is another weird one. Oh, well, look, China. It's 200 years, 300 BC. You don't expect top notch. You don't expect Friends or an episode of MASH to come out of 300 years BC. You expect this type of stuff. So it's Lao Tzu's Awake. Lao Tan lay dead. Okay, so it's not Lao Tzu's, it's Lao Tan lay dead. And Xi Xin attended his wake. He let out three yells and went home. There's more to it. Yell, yell, yell. Yell, yell, yell. Yeah, yell, yell, yell. Or the yells would be then Dr. Zeus, three yells. One yell, two yell, three yell. One of the disciples said, "Were you not the master's friend?" "Certainly," he replied. "Is it then sufficient for you to mourn no better than what you've just done?" "In the beginning," said Xin Shi, "I thought he was the greatest of men. No longer. When I came to mourn, I found old men lamenting him as their son, young men sobbing as though for their mother. How did he bind them to himself so tight? If not by words he should never have said, and tears he should never have wept." Gee, that sounds something with a chip in their soul, if I've ever come across it. But let's see, he's going to redeem himself. He weakened his true being. He laid on load upon load of emotion increased the enormous reckoning. He forgot the gift of God had entrusted him. This the ancient calls punishment for neglecting the true self. The master came at the right time into the world. When his time was up, he left it again. He who waits his time, who submits, when his work is done in his life, there is no room for sorrow or for rejoicing. Here is how the ancients said all this, this in four worlds. God cuts the thread. Isn't that beautiful? God is cutting my thread. That's my beautiful. Sorry, I've just been through a near-death experience, heart operations, and that is so God cutting a thread. Isn't that beautiful? We have seen a fire of sticks burn out. The fire now burns in some other place. Where? Who knows? These brands are burnt out. Well, there you go. So that's a bit of a way to make your point. Yeah, right. I just think he's very rude, just going up to wake. Yeah, 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 yeah. And then he goes, "Well, look, He hasn't lived. If you're attending a wake, you still know we no joy. Joy person, you could not get him in a funeral home. Would he? We only have sort of a no non-attendance funeral here. Just calm down, take it all in your stride. Confucius and the Madman. When Confucius was visiting the state of Chu, along the Ku, along came Ku. Our Chinese restaurant's called the Kuyue, but it's not spelled that way. The Madman of Chu, and sang outside the master's door. Oh, well, that's a great thing. It wouldn't be great 300 BC and be called a madman. You have to be really good man. Oh Phoenix, where is your virtue gone? It cannot reach the future or bring the past to, bring the past again. When the world makes sense, the wise have work to do. They can only hide when the world is askew. Today, if you can stay alive, lucky are you, try to survive. Joy is a feather light, but who can carry it? Sorrow falls like a landslide, but who can parry it? Okay, that's sort of a bit pretty mad, pretty good, man. Never, never teach virtue more. You walk in danger, beware, beware. Even ferns can catch your feet. When I walk crazy, I walk right, but I'm a man to imitate. The tree of the mountain height is its own enemy. The geese that feeds the light devours itself. The cinnamon tree is edible, so cut it down. The lucky tree is profitable, so maim it. Every man knows how useful it is to be useful. No one seems to know how useful it is to be useless. I sort of think that is that if you've got value, you get sucked up. Okay, I'm just going to stop now because that's enough reading. This is unfortunately, I'm reading it. I'm saying there's stuff I appreciate here, but I'm not memorizing any of it. I'm sort of getting the general gist, but not memorizing. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.